I wouldn't trade being a mom for the world, but it's also a full-time job. And that means sometimes I get less sleep than I'd like. So I make the most of the hours of sleep I do get with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding products. Cozy Earth bedding products are crafted with temperature-regulating technology that adapts to your body's needs through all phases of motherhood. And they use only the very best fabrics, materials, and weaves, offering superior softness that invites you to sink into a world of comfort. I have the king sheets for my bed, the entire set, and I swear to you, it's like you can't wait to get in and you never want to get out. If you're a commitment phobe, that's totally fine because Cozy Earth stands by the quality and longevity of their products, so much so that you can enjoy a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty on all purchases. And just for our listeners, Cozy Earth has an exclusive Mother's Day offer. Use the code Jillian for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. That's CozyEarth.com. Cozy Earth, built to last through the hardest days and the longest nights of motherhood.
When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Woo-wee! Gosh, I've had a good week.
Oh, you know what?
There's nothing on my mind.
There's always something on your mind.
No, I'm just, it's been a, oh, thank God. Calm, quiet week.
Well, I've had an interesting, and I'm not taking this lightly, but I've had an interesting week, if you care to hear.
Oh, okay.
Oh, all right.
Well, what is it?
On a serious note.
Let me get my serious face. Yeah.
On. One of the note, just to introduce it is a little bit, but I almost lost my dad this week, week. And he pulled through. So that's why I say, I don't mean to make light of it or anything, but my dad's got Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Right? And he suffered a stroke. And we thought, you know, and I was praying, I was, God, you know, if this is the time to take him, you know, take him while he's at peace, you know, and because Alzheimer's, you know, when you know, there's many people who have had their lives touched with Alzheimer's, yeah. Right? So, and you see that person and you think, oh, just give them peace. And then when my dad pulled, you know, he's a strong guy, he pulled through and, you know, he's, you know, there's some changes, of course, with a stroke. But, and I started thinking, why did that happen? Why didn't he get to be taken? Oh God, why didn't you take him? You know, and I realized that his job isn't done yet. And I realized that it was a kind of an epiphany for me because we're here till wherever we're done. And there's a lesson to be learned. Like obviously
at every stage.
Yeah. And it's hard to say, well, how can you learn something from a man who's, you know, riddled with tangled brain? What can you learn? And there is something like, obviously I've got healing to do. Maybe this is my chance to heal my relationship with my dad, even though I can't communicate with him.
Mm.
Maybe this is that. Maybe it's for...
To find peace.
To find peace. Maybe it's not for me. Maybe it's for the grandchildren to have empathy for someone who is not the same grandpa he used to be and to realize, you know, go up there and visit him, you know?
Yeah.
And it reminded me of a story. I always remember this woman and her child was going to die. She had a daughter who was about 10 and the daughter had an illness that was going to die.
I cannot imagine that.
And she said she didn't, when she prayed, she didn't pray to God to say, please don't let her die.
Right.
She prayed to God to say, please give me the words to comfort her. Because she couldn't.
Oh my God! I'm gonna unravel now.
No, but
I just said I was having a good week.
No, but I mean, it's like It's like you realize you can only do what you can do. Like, she couldn't stop that from happening.
Yeah.
So she asked for help to do something she could do. And it's the same as, what am I supposed to learn here? So people are around, whether they're around for 10 years as a child or whether they're around till they're 89, like my dad.
Yeah.
You know, there's something, there's a bigger reason why we're still here. And it's until our job
is done.
Is done. You know?
I love that, though, because it really says, like, don't waste a minute. And here you were, I don't know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I have not been in that position, for better or worse. I lost all my grandparents when I was really young. Mm-hmm. I was extremely close with my grandmother, and I often wondered, is it worse that I was deprived all those years with her, or watch her slip away from me slowly? Like, you know, you ever play those games, like, what's worse? Is it worse?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what would be more horrible for me and them? But I've often thought, like, well, I would want it to be quick for them. I wouldn't want them to suffer. But at the same time, I'll never forget this. This was kind of a weird segment that I had to do on the doctors, and I didn't really understand what they wanted me to do. There was a woman on the show, and she had three kids. One of them had something called Niemann-Pick's disease, and it's terminal for the most part.
Right.
And I was like, okay, what am I trying to do here? Because what are we, I don't understand. Where are we going with this segment? Mm-hmm. What's the takeaway? You know? And I got, the Jay McGraw was like, you need to get in there and you need to say, you snap out of it. You've got two other kids. I know. Oh, Hold on. Let me finish the story. Right. I know. And, you know, like, you got two other kids and you're not going to feel guilty and sorry for yourself. And I was like, oh, God, this is a mistake. Right. So I tried to find that balance for him, where I went in and I was like, I'll be damned if I'm gonna let you feel responsible for this. And I kind of raised my voice a little bit so he felt like I was being the Jillian he thought was on Biggest Loser, mm-hmm. even though he'd never watched the show.
Right,
which is a completely different story. But what I realized and what I tried to tell her out of that is, I was like, look, you know, and when I kind of was able to sort of deviate and go down my path, because I was like, what am I going to tell this woman? I don't understand what the takeaway is here. This is devastating. What's the takeaway? So what I ended up saying is, like, your kid's still alive. And if you waste all of this energy feeling responsible for this, even though, by the way, that's a necessary stage of grief and it's totally normal for a mother to feel that way. And I wanted so badly to just validate that she felt that way. But I said, you know, you still have this time to be with him and spend with your child. And if you are flogging yourself for every minute of it, think of the greater loss. Mm. Now, having said all that, obviously, you can't possibly know until you've walked in those shoes. And you have no business telling somebody else how to manage it other than to just listen and support them, which is what I would have done. If it was my show, I would have brought her on after and had her counsel a mom who was going through it,
right,
and talk about how to survive and endure it. But, it, you know, nevertheless, here we were in this moment. And I think what you're saying is exactly, it's like, don't ever write off the moment and don't waste a moment.
Yeah, because you don't know. Because you don't know what you're going to inspire. Like when they interview doctors and people who have gone really far places, you know, not that we don't go far places, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Like,
and they say, why did you become a doctor? Why did you become a brain surgeon?
Right.
And oftentimes it's because my little sister died of a brain tumor. I watched my grandma or my grandpa or my father, be riddled with Alzheimer's. So I decided to do something about it.
Yes.
The person is there till they feed whatever inspiration
as necessary.
I really thought about it. And I went, it's not time yet. It's just not time yet. And while I don't want to see him suffer, I don't. You know what? He's not suffering. He's not the same. He's a different dad, but he's teaching somewhere. And we don't know. And as you say, and you've often said this, we don't know what the result is until we look back and go, that's why.
That's what it was.
That's what it was.
And sometimes you have to bring that meaning of like, what am I learning from this? And you're learning something right now in searching for the lesson.
For sure. For sure. You know, because it was a roller coaster and you just kind of, when you kind of calm down and just look at it.
I'm so sorry, Janice.
No, but it's, I don't take it lightly, but it's life, you know, it's life lessons we're supposed to be, you know?
Maria Shriver once said to me, she said, my generation is the crunched generation. You're younger than her, but she's like, you know, we're taking care of ailing parents and we're raising kids.
Oh, the sandwich, sandwich generation.
She's
right.
Just like, yeah. We're just, you know, we're spread so thin. And, you know, her dad had Alzheimer's.
Right.
And oh my God, poor woman. I feel for you. And I love that lesson. And I think we should all think about that. It's just finding the meaning, not wasting a moment and
yeah, yeah, exactly.
Celebrating life and the life of others while we have it. And see.
And see. And
now let's do something really fluffy and silly, like how to boost your energy. Energy zappers. Son of a gun. Is your cell phone making you tired? Don't go away.
It's all good.
It's a challenging tease. Woohoo!
We'll be right back.
Had my dream, I held your hand on that broad avenue. We crossed the road and never spoke to another as we flew. We left your man alone and drag, laughing there at us. A romantic bust, a blunder turned, explosive blunderbuss.
Well, should we lighten the mood with something frivolous?
Yes.
Kind of.
All for the frivolity.
Frivolity of
life.
Yes. Well, okay. So I was going to talk about ways to naturally boost your energy.
Mm. Oh, besides the bad ways, these are good ways.
Well,
natural
come
ways.
On, think about it. What do we always do? Oh, I'm tired. And we pound a coffee or we take something. You know, there's a reason that products like eBoost and things like that are gazillion-dollar businesses. Uh-huh. By the way, I happen to love eBoost, but that is not the point. You can't do an eBoost every hour on the hour. I allow myself uno eBoost a day, and I don't get it with, like, coffee. I get one caffeine drink a day, and that's it. But you can't, you know, people will turn to those things like one and then another, and they'll take two. I mean, there are people in my office, they think it's hilarious. They'll drink, like, shots of them every hour. I'm like, you guys, you can't ingest 1,000 milligrams of caffeine. Your head's going to explode.
Oy.
I know. What does that say about me as an employer?
I had to keep my mouth shut.
It's not me. But my point is just there. First of all, there are things that are draining you. So I wanted to look at that, right? The number one thing is dehydration. We just aren't drinking enough water. I'm so guilty of this. And remember when Dr. V came on the show and she talked about the importance of hydration?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, we literally wilt like a flower. Like, our energy level is just like, it just fades, fails, falls to pieces. Did you know that 3% of your body weight is water? Seriously. So if you're feeling lightheaded or you're dragging a bit or you're just tired or sluggish or lethargic, pound a glass of water and I bet you in 15, 20 minutes you're going to feel better. And a lot of times we reach for sugar because we're tired. Sugar and caffeine. Try the water first. Just try it. Now, let's talk about things that keep us up at night. And I've been kind of guilty about this. Your phone. So often we'll check our messages, check our emails, even the computer in bed. The computer should never be allowed in bed. Never. Because you start to work and you get all amped up and you do that before bed. And then you're just like, oh my God, I have a million things to do. Oh my God, I have to do this. Oh my God, I have to do that. And it makes us anxious. But in addition, you know, they've done numerous studies about that artificial blue light from our electronic gadgets. Mm-hmm. Well, supposedly it suppresses our sleep hormone called melatonin. So the last thing you want to be doing is getting on your computer or, you know, being on your cell phone. It's just, it ramps up your brain, and that blue light is also muy bad for helping you kind of unwind and releasing melatonin. I actually take a melatonin supplement before bed now. And I love
just
it.
Like a melatonin.
Yeah, I get them. I have two of them. Like one I got at like my little local, you know, vitamin shop.
Yeah.
But it's like valerian root and melatonin and I don't know, might be like chamomile or something. I don't know. It's like all natural. And it helps me so much. Like within 20 minutes, I'm out, asleep. It's heaven.
Wow.
Totally natural. There's no hangover, nothing. You don't feel anything. It's just, and you know that melatonin helps to fight breast cancer, which is actually why I started taking it. But anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I know there's a vast amount of things that, because I've been told about melatonin and I've never boosted it.
I take one little supplement before bed. Love it. I'm out like a light in 20 minutes. I get off my phone. I have a no computer in the bed rule. And I'm out. It's really helped me fall asleep. Because once I'm out, I'm out. I'm not a light sleeper. But falling asleep has been a challenge for me. So, moving on. Medication. You could be on certain medications that are exhausting you. So, antidepressants are big for that. Beta blockers are big for that. One of the things you can do is obviously you don't want to be jumping off your medication, but talk to your doctor about it. Maybe they can adjust the dose. Or maybe they can have you take your medication before bed. So that if anything, it's allowing you to sleep. You're not taking it like first thing in the morning and then your whole day you're just like, ugh, dragging.
Right.
So check with your doc about dose and then check with them about the timing that you take your medication. Now, this one's actually really important. Exercise. Exercise can boost your energy if you do it the right way. But if you overtrain, it can wipe you out because it's going to release a ton of stress hormone like cortisol. So for those people who are working out like 2 hours a day, 6 days a week, unless you're obese, and I mean, we're talking obese, like 50 plus pounds overweight, you should not be exercising like that. It's too much damage and like wear and tear on the body. Your body just can't handle it. So for people who are addicted to exercise and they love it, you know, they go for a 10 mile run and then later they hit the gym and it's too much. You could be just, and a lot of times you'll notice a decrease in your performance. So you're not able to lift as much or you're not able to run as fast. That's another good sign of overtraining. And when your resting heart rate is elevated. So for example, if normally your resting heart rate is 60, 70, 80 beats a minute, right? Mine's like 65, I don't know, something like that. So for me, if I was beating it like 80 beats a minute, I would know, ooh, that's high for me.
Yeah.
Presuming I didn't just take my e-boost, right?
Yeah.
With that said, if your resting heart rate's elevated, that's a good indication that you're overtrained. And if your maximum heart rate, so let's say you're running your sprint and you're not getting that heart rate above 150 and it's normally at 180, right? You're hauling butt at 12, 13, 14 miles an hour. And your heart rate is dropped when you're going for max performance. That also tells you you're overtrained. But you know when you're working out too much. So dial it back.
Now, do you ever work out at night yourself?
I have worked out at night. It doesn't really keep me up. I'm not that girl.
It
I know.
Yeah. See, I've taken every once in a while, I take a late night yoga class where it finishes like at 9:15, 9:30. And it actually feels great.
Oh, you
know. No, I'm really, really, maybe because it's yoga. I don't know if I would get
it's
the same
very
effect.
Zen.
Yeah. It's just, and then you do your, you know, your hoogie at the end.
Shavasana. I've fallen asleep in Shavasana a million times.
I have too.
I've been in Shavasana and I've heard somebody else in the class. every time. So I think yoga is very restorative, though, or it can be very restorative. So
yeah, okay.
If you are going to work out at night, that's a great option. And then let's say you're not working out, but you start to work out and you're doing 30 to 45 minutes, 3 to 5 times a week, you're going to notice an increase in energy because that's going to get the serotonin going and all the happy hormones are going to be surging through the body and you're boosting metabolism and all of that. That's great. That's going to actually boost your energy. So that's a great way to get that natural energy kick. On your lunch hour, go for a quick walk, you know, do a 30-minute walk with your coworker or pop in an exercise DVD in the morning before you head out to work. It's 30 minutes and you just, you know, get your groove on for the day. Take a class after work. It just helps to get the blood flowing and release those happy hormones. And when the happy hormones are going, it just naturally makes you feel more ready to take on the world, more energized. Another one that you may not think about, and this is really for women only, is you could have low iron. You could be borderline anemic. And the reason it's for women only is because we have the tremendous pleasure of...
Aunt Flo comes to town.
Yeah. Ugh.
Mm-hmm. It totally zaps your iron.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I hate it. Which is why you may notice that you crave red meat at that time of the month, maybe after in particular, because your body wants the iron and the vitamin B12. But
carnivore. We turn into carnivores.
Yeah, if you're
just
vegan,
tear the meat. Just you take the teeth. And I know. These two teeth, and you just tear the meat. You just tear it, just like
yeah,
a.
Yeah, that's what
like,
you do. Yeah, well, I no. wish this was a video cast. I would love to see you do this.
No, I don't crave red meat that often.
I don't either. I pretty much never. No, like I do once every 2 weeks, grass fed beef.
Yeah,
but the reality is, if you're vegan, here's an option. Come on, Jillian. Spinach is really high in iron, but what helps with iron absorption is vitamin C. So put some lemon on your steamed spinach, and that can help with your iron absorption. And of course, a multivitamin will also help. Another one. Negative people. Debbie Downers.
Oh, yeah.
God, what a drain. I mean, and I've had friends where I had that vibe with them where we would just like sort of get together and spin out on things that were wrong. And we finally got to the point where like, we cannot talk about these things anymore. Like we would get into like one subject in particular, or, you know, Bob and I used to do this about Loser all the time. We would both like, ugh, we would kind of get in a conversation like outside of work, and it'd be like, oh my God, I'm miserable. Oh my God, I'm miserable. Oh my God, I want to kill myself. I want to kill myself. Guess what they're doing next week? Oh my God, I want to kill myself. And we both would leave dinner just like, oh my God, I don't think I can see you again, even though I have to see you tomorrow because I want to kill myself. Like we literally would have to, you know, finally we got to a point where we're like, we are not allowed to discuss this stuff because it felt like we were venting about it. And like we were the only two people that understood it. But at the same time, it would depress and stress us out. Don't engage in negative conversations and don't hang out with people who are Debbie Downers.
And there's a difference between a friend who's feeling down about something and
yes.
or the person who is just like, oh, my
constantly
God.
Negative.
It's Sally's on the phone again. Oh, God. You know, or you get that text. Hey, it's Sally. Oh, it's all.
No.
And forgive all other women named Sally out there. It's not directed.
Yeah,
at
it's not you, Sally.
It's not you, Sally.
Jeez.
It's a different sound. It's a different
all
Sally.
Another Sally. Anyway.
Yeah.
Last one. You ready?
I'm ready.
Well, no, there's two more.
Okay.
Do we have time? No, there's
yep.
three.
You know what? Now you're.
Okay, here we go. Take a nap when you can. Power nap. 15 minutes will do it. That'll boost your energy if you can. Okay, number two, don't skip meals because you get that dip in blood sugar and you drag booty, and then you and use common sense. Don't eat foods that are just sugar and flour because you're going to get that sugar crash because you're going to spike the insulin. Then what's going to happen is your blood sugar is going to go nuts, right? Then you're going to release all this insulin to clean out all that sugar, and you're going to get a blood sugar crash. So eat regularly. Don't skip meals. Don't eat processed junk. Make sure that you're getting healthy foods in there. Okay. And then last but not least, make sure that you do something you love. Make sure that you have hobbies that you can look forward to because, you know, when you have that passion, it boosts your energy.
I know what yours is.
That's mine.
Sea glass.
Sea glass. Yeah. You know, I've had a sea glass shortage lately.
Maybe it's you know what's going to start coming. You know what's interesting?
What?
Going to be coming to the shores of the West Coast all the way
from... Oh, that tsunami stuff.
All
I
the
know.
Tsunami stuff.
I'm worried about that, actually.
I am, too. I'm, you know, because...
That's creepy, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be treasure hunters. You know, I mean, of course there's going to be treasure hunters
creepy.
Out there, but there's also...
I heard about that, yeah. No, that's creepy.
Like mountains of it.
No,
like, stuff no. coming to all the way up. California, Oregon.
Oh,
up
my
to
God.
British Columbia.
That is awful. I'm not thinking about that.
Nope.
Okay. Anyway, we're going to take calls.
Oh, yeah.
But yes, calls?
We can't.
No, Dr. V.
Dr. V's coming on.
Yay!
Yeah,
Dr. V's coming up. Favorite doctor on the planet, Dr. Katya Van Hurley.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. She is probably the greatest well-known endocrinologist in the world, honestly.
I'm one endocrinologist in the world. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. You can be modest. Anyway, she is probably the renowned expert on endocrinology. Even you can go ahead. I'll handle it. You don't have to address it. And Dr. Van Hurley has worked with me on Losing It with Jillian and has done numerous segments with me on The Doctors, on CBS, and of course also has been kind enough to contribute to our podcast and now The Daily Dose. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about five medical myths we're going to debunk. Now, the first one really upsets me because I have struggled with allergies my entire life. And you're now saying that allergy medicines don't cure allergies, that the myth is that they do?
So what people think about allergy medicines is that if you take them, you're going to get rid of your allergies.
Well, yeah. Why else would you
Wrong. False. You can't get rid of your allergies. What you can do is stop the sniffles, the eye itching, the redness. It's all symptomatic. It's just band-aiding the whole problem. So when you look at stopping what causes allergies, and the most common things right now in springtime is pollen, grasses.
Grass
but also
is the worst.
It can be foods. It can still be any kind of medications and so forth. So allergies can be from anything environmentally that tells your immune system to have a reaction.
And why would I, like, I get this the worst at the barn. So, like, when I'm dealing with my horses, if they've just been eating and one of them puts their mouth on me, yeah, my whole arm lights up. What? So my body's afraid that I'm going to die of grass? What is that?
So your immune system has learned that there's something about grass that it doesn't like. Now, it either is misconnecting. We call that molecular hybrid. And that means that it's seeing something like a protein or a molecule in those grasses or in those pollens that it doesn't like. And it's saying, okay, I don't want this. I'm going to fight it. You get that red urticaria. And again, people get it in their sinuses. Ugh. They get it in their throat.
Yeah.
They get it in their lungs, like with asthma. They get it in their eyes. But the immune system is trying to fight something. So if you take an allergy medicine, all you're doing is quelling or stopping those symptoms. But your body is still fighting it. You're not changing anything.
So is it not worth taking, like, the Benadryl or the Zyrtec or the this or that? You should just avoid
it. So antihistamines, because histamine is part of making an allergic reaction.
Right.
Leukotrienes, those are also made through the immune system. All those anti-drugs stop the reaction. You can do it if you have to get out, if you have to get on a show, if you have to make a presentation. If you're so sick that you can't sleep, you can't talk, you can't walk. But otherwise, I tell people, try and avoid the allergen, or here's the thing that really does help cure allergies, immunotherapy. And that's where when you go to an allergy immunologist, a specialist, and they do those injections, those weekly injections, which they sometimes have to do for years.
Yeah, my brother does that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's different. That's where you actually take a little bit of that pollen, that horse hay, that grass, you inject it in small amounts, and retrain the immune system and reset the clock. So that can potentially cure the allergies. But everything else, less is more. If you don't need to take it and you're doing okay and you can get through and struggle a little bit. You don't need all that medication.
Wow. Okay. Well,
it's in your body, right? It's in
absolutely.
You.
I mean, I preemptively now take a Benadryl. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go see the horses today. I got to take a Benadryl. And I don't even, by the way, I don't even mess with it anymore because it's just in anticipation of having a reaction.
And that's what a lot of people do. So we call that over-medicating. Now, here's something that's
so
really
funny
important.
Too, and it's not my style.
Exactly,
either,
right? Less is more. Now, less is more. Okay. You know, I will always say it. One of the things, and this is a very cursory, tangential, like sidebar, but what we've seen, especially in young children, is the increased use of Benadryl maybe related to increased rates of autism.
What?
At an early age. Right. So you have to be a little bit careful with the antihistamines and I would say all medications.
Oh, my God.
We don't know if it's because of a delay in diagnosis. We don't know if it's because the baby's actually, their immune system is unlearning or relearning something that has to do with their learning capacity. So be really careful.
This is terrifying to me because everybody who's told me, well, if you need to fly with the baby, just give them children's Benadryl.
People do it all the time. And that's not even related to allergies. They do it, guess what? Just for the convenience of
the
parents. Because guess who you don't want to be? You don't want to be the mom or dad with the
screaming
child.
On the plane.
And I've been that person in the front aisle between all the business people and your baby's crying and your baby's going to cry. That's the way it is.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I'm so glad you told me that.
Because everybody super careful.
Was like, oh, you know, when you're bringing Mackenzie home, like if you need to bring children's Benadryl in case she freaks out on the plane. And yeah. I was like, oh, okay.
Kids don't freak out if parents set the tone.
Thank you. All right. Now here's one that okay. I love because I can't believe I didn't know this. I used to think that whenever it was cold outside, mm-hmm. you're not sweating, you know, right. it's wintertime. So there's no way you could get dehydrated. Right. That's not true.
It is so not true that I cannot tell you this is one of the biggest struggles I have with our patients. And that is, yes, it's not summer. You're not going to the beach. You're not out on the sea. You're not getting your suntan. But you are getting drier and drier and drier. A, because in a lot of places, especially Southern California, but elsewhere, when it gets cold, if you ever noticed when you're in cold weather, for it really to snow, it has to be that dry, mm-hmm. temperate cold. That dries you out. And we have what we call insensible losses. That means our body has to try and keep its body temperature, meaning warm up, stay warm, at the cost of our breathing. That means we're losing like vapor from our tongue, from our skin, all our mucous membranes actually everywhere, and our lungs. So what you're doing is you're getting drier and drier and drier in cold weather.
Is that why your skin gets so dry and my lips
and
crack?
And you look and haggard and you go to the mountains and you feel like a little
my
little
hair
crinkly.
Has no...
You
it's
are
like
one ugly ski bunny. That's all I can say.
You know those little dried apples, those little cob apples, like with that you put the little like faces in and they're like a little dried apple?
Yeah.
That's what ends up happening. And people forget. You have a higher metabolic rate in the winter. So even though people think they're gaining weight because they're eating comfort foods right. and their metabolism is down, like we're not bears. We don't hibernate like bears. That's a wonderful, wonderful analogy, but we don't do that. And it's been really highly studied because we're trying to figure out what happens. But our metabolic rate goes up in the winter and our fluid status goes down. So you've got to drink fluids in the winter. It's something no one thinks about.
No.
It's hot outside. I'll get my water. Otherwise, I won't. Well, you're more tired in the winter, right? You feel like you're going to hibernate. You start going like this. You look dry and crinkly, like the little dried out apples. You got to hydrate in the winter.
All right. Now, this third one I love because I need a little backup with this. Uh-huh. I can't tell you how many people that I've tried to work with in the past, like, oh, no, my back.
Yes.
Oh, no, I can't do anything my back. Oh, no, I don't work out because of my back. And I try to explain to them. They're like, no, I can't do anything because of my back. And I can't tell you how many doctors have said, oh, you've got a back problem. You need bed rest.
Right.
You can't do anything.
Right.
And this is a myth.
So if your doctor says you need bed rest, unless you have some serious spinal cord or disc injury, that it would be a neurosurgeon or a spinal orthopedist that would tell you that, forget it. You have a doctor from the 1900s. This and 1800s. This is such a myth. It's unbelievable. And in fact, what we've seen is it's not just low back pain and back pain that does worse if you have bed rest, but it's actually other illnesses, asthma, infection, pneumonias, potentially cancer patients. We are made to be up and walking. Now, what's really important about getting up and walking is you keep your muscle tone. You know all about this. You don't get deconditioned. Guess what else? Guess how your colon makes poo? How do you get that out? Walking. Yeah. What's the number one thing for someone who's had surgeries, and that's despite the anesthesia? Why do they not have their bowel movements right away? Because they're not up and walking. Why do you think the nurses want everyone up and out of bed?
I had no idea.
Peristalsis and the way the colon and our intestines work is through mobility.
Really?
So you are at risk not only for worsening back pain if you don't move.
I know that from having older parents who stopped moving and then they start pushing the laxatives.
Yeah.
Which,
absolutely.
They first thing they say, get them moving.
So you start getting constipation, you get deconditioned, you don't help your back pain. In fact, it worsens.
Yeah. Right.
Your asthma, and if you have any kind of lung infections or propensity for lung infections, guess what happens when you pool your lungs? They're little balloons. You're laying down all day. Guess what's happening? They start collapsing. We call that atelectasis. And bacteria love getting in there. Now you've got a pneumonia. And that can happen within a week of bed rest.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
You know, this is so interesting because when I was a young kid, my grandmother had this chronic back pain.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, she went to Europe on vacation. They threw her in the hospital.
Right.
We don't know what it is. We think she's got Cushing syndrome. This all happened within a matter of a week. She's on her back for the week. All of a sudden, She's got pneumonia.
Right.
And it was the pneumonia that killed her.
So when our patients, for instance, a hip fracture, why is the mortality or death rate 50% or up to 50%? That means out of every two people that break their hip within the next 2 to 5 years, half of them are dead. It's because they become bedbound. They don't move anymore. They get, for our elderly patients, pneumonia, number one killer. So you've got to move. But also, even if you're young and healthy, and it's really critical, you've got to move. Now, we're not saying go out and start doing heavy lifting and taking a job at one of the big, you know, Home Depots and checking in like all your, you know, your sod. And don't do all that.
I've got a back problem, but now I'm on a pit crew team.
Right.
I think it's really going to help.
So, I mean, within reason, but you've got to move because those muscles only do better if you use them. And in fact, I think it's a little bit of a crutch if people say, oh, I can't move. I mean, I can't lift is something different.
Right.
But I can't move. I've got to stay home. I've got to have back rest. Forget it. You're not going to do better.
I didn't know it was that critical.
I didn't either.
One or two people.
Wow. Like, wow. Okay. Now, this one I would love a little help with. Fruit and diabetics.
Yeah.
So, first of all, there's a lot of confusion about type 1 and type 2 diabetes. Yeah. And how does fruit apply to both? Because, by the way, people who have type 2 diabetes come to me and they're like, oh, no, I need the sugar.
Yeah.
I'm like, No. You're all wrong here. Please explain this.
Okay. So, number one, sugar, glucose. That is the primary energy source for our brains. That's how our brain, our central nervous system, functions. So we all need glucose. By the way, just as any other cell in our body, it also uses glucose. It's like the little logs on the fire that goes in the muscle cell, the heart cell, and that's how the energy is burnt. It's like little trains all over, and you need to put those little logs on the fire. So glucose is critical. The difference that you see in diabetics, and we'll talk about type 1 and type 2, is that glucose, whether it comes in the form of high fructose corn syrup, honey, agave, or a nice apple or watermelon, sugar is sugar, folks. Mm. So it's the same molecule. Now, do we prefer, if you have to take in sugar, that you actually get a great fruit sugar or from honey or a natural or organic sugar? Of course. But for a diabetic, sugar is what they can't get in the cells. For type 1 diabetics, the reason they can't move sugar into their cells is because their pancreas, through an autoimmune disease, is destroyed.
Insulin.
And it can't. Those cells are killed. For a type 2 diabetic, until they get very end stage, it's because as they're gaining weight, their little cell doors are stuck and their pancreas is making insulin, which is different than a type 1, but they can't keep up. They can't make enough to get those cell doors open and get sugar in there. So for both type 1 and type 2 diabetics, they need some sugar. But I always say sugar is your treat. When you eat a piece of fruit, that's like having a candy snack. And it's really important you see fruit as a treat because a lot of our diabetic patients, what they start doing is they're like, oh, and I'm eating sugar all day and like their sugars are 200 and they should be under 90. So it's really important, even if it's a fruit. It's a myth to think it's a healthy sugar. Yes, it's a healthy sugar, but it's a sugar, and you can't have sugar.
Wow. Okay, I got to be honest. I did think that there was a difference with a piece of fruit versus a piece of candy because of the delivery system with the fiber. Not so, or only minimally different?
So really good point, Jillian. So glycemic index, and there's this whole theory, and by the way, it's never been fully borne out, even though there's a lot of physicians who believe in it and a lot that really don't. The glycemic index has to do with how early that sugar is released and how long it lasts. Now, when I said, would you get a healthier sugar out of a piece of fruit, an apple, than let's say a now and later, like candy, which we love. But out of an apple you will, because exactly what you said. You have to digest that. There's fiber. There's a slower absorption and release of the sugar. So don't eat your candy bars. But it's sugar. When you absorb it, pound for pound, what you absorb, you're absorbing glucose. Doesn't mean if you're diabetic, type 1 or type 2, you shouldn't have sugar, but you've got to factor it in as a treat. This is a dessert.
Oh, it's so not a trip. My sister said, my sister just got diagnosed with diabetes, and she said, but it's fruit. It's good for me.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and that because it's, and it's not classified as a treat at all.
Oh,
it's,
God,
it's
just, no.
It's a healthy, think, yeah. I'm doing something good.
And you need to include it in your diet. So I like what she's saying. It is good for you. But if you're diabetic and you can't handle sugar, are you going to start eating mounds and mounds of fruit?
No.
Yeah. I don't think so.
No. All right, now this is our last one, and this one I actually had a friend experience. Mm-hmm. Got a ton of freckles and would only check the areas that was exposed were being exposed to the sun. So I saw this little mole on like her rib cage right here, and I was like, buddy, what is that?
What's
do
that?
You because do you have you had that checked? And it's like, oh no, I don't get any sun there. And sure enough, it was, how is that possible? Okay. So here's the myth. When I do my body skin checks for freckles and moles, it's most important to look where the sun hits your skin.
Okay.
Not true.
So it's really not true. What's really important is get a mirror out, by the way, folks, and look all over. And I'm going to say some specific areas that we'll go through of why this is so critical. We know that the most common sun formed skin cancers are basal cell and squamous cell carcinoma.
Right.
Now, those are the ones that generally don't what we call metastasize or spread and become very dangerous killers. But I can tell you we have patients, unfortunately, who still do come very late with all kinds of basal cell or squamous cell skin cancers that do metastasize, especially, by the way, if they take supplements that include growth hormone injections. It's a really important thing.
See, okay, I'm sorry. I'm going to digress for a second because I have heard that if you're supplementing human growth hormone, that it can cause cancer cells to grow. But then other doctors have said, no, that's not true, because if you look at the HIV community, we're not seeing a higher amount of the Kaposi sarcoma that they get. That's not true.
Well, here's the thing. There's not a lot of data, but there's some data to show that if you had, and we're going to go back to the non-sun-related reasons to look all over, but for the especially sun-related cancers like squamous carcinoma, squamous cell, CA, we call it, if you have growth-promoting hormones like human growth hormone, they become more invasive. So whereas it would just be something on your shoulder, on your chest, and they can be scraped off and you're done, these tend to go all the way down. They go into the blood vessels and the lymphatics, and then they spread.
Oh,
and guess
gosh.
What? Before you know it, you could have a chance now to have to go on chemo, radiation, just like anyone else. But so it's really, really important. Okay, so you're going to look at all the sun areas. It's not to say you don't look there, but guess where else you have to look? You look behind your ears. You look between your toes and your fingers. These are called the intertriginous areas. And that means you actually have to go and look in between.
I'm freaking out.
Look on your palms. Look on the pads of your feet. Take your nail polish, ladies or gentlemen, off your toes and your fingers and look in the nail beds. That's where you will find very often, and we haven't even talked about genital areas, rectal areas, that armpits, you want to look everywhere. That's where you may find not only the basal or squamous cell cancers, but also melanoma. Melanoma is the dangerous, or let's say more dangerous skin cancer, because that's the one that we know is a killer. And melanoma is something that we really have to be careful with. And it's the one that is more commonly seen, if you will, in areas that are not sun exposed. There's probably a higher genetic element. So if you have a family history of melanoma, for sure, get your annual, if not 6-month skin checks with pictures. Good dermatologists or plastic surgeons who follow along with this will take pictures and follow them.
And I was like,
absolutely.
What are you thinking? I'm like,
And they've got the big, they wear like the Mr. Magoo glasses.
He
and
did.
Look at you.
I was like, Dr. Lancer, I'm like, I'm Mediterranean.
Yeah, yeah.
What are you doing? And he's like,
I know Dr. Lancer, and he does this the right way.
I'm like, dude, I'm here for you to, like, you know, make me look younger. And
so,
he makes me do the whole, I'm like.
But people forget. And guess what? Not only do it for yourself, but you have to do it for your children, because you got to open their little toes, look at their little fingers, look behind their ears. You've got to look and follow.
Oh, my God.
Because you will, think about it. Will you find something on yourself in between your first and second great toes? No, you won't see it unless you go down and look. How many times do you look at the sole of your feet? Unless you're getting your pedicure, if you're lucky enough to be able to get one. Right?
Yeah.
You've got to look at those, because those are the ones that I'm not saying they can occur, but those are the ones that are the really dangerous potential stinkers, and everyone forgets about them. The other thing that's really important I'm going to go back to is in your nail beds, make sure that every once in a while you look, because we don't understand exactly why, but people may have like a dark spot in a toenail, in a nail bed. The most common thing. The most common thing that's from is trauma. You hit the nail, you hit the hammer, you're trying to do some homework,
and
you didn't do it right. The bruise. That's by far the most common. But if that doesn't go away, you got to go see your dermatologist. And what people forget is hair, nails, and skin is what dermatologists do. So look in all the little nooks and crannies of your body, because that is where you have a chance of potentially finding the much more serious cancers like melanoma.
Well, what I find, though, is just even doing the look, like how many people truly check their bodies?
Well, especially when you have darker skin. So like when you're Mediterranean or you're African American or all.
And that's another myth which we can tack on, and that is if you have more melanin, because your skin is potentially more protected from the sun, darker skin, African American, Latino, Caribbean, Afro-Caribbean, Indian, etc., go on and on. Are you at risk? For the bad malignancies, yes, there are still risks. You have to get those checked. And certainly, of course, anything that changes, bleeds, grows quickly, go. Oh, even if all you can do is go to your family doctor, urgent care, get it addressed, because this is all curable stuff. Get your mirrors, check in between your legs. People forget on vagina, vulva. We didn't talk about all that. Anus.
Dr. Van Hurley, thank you so much. You are awesome.
You're welcome, as always.
Now,
thank you.
Guys, if you want to learn more from Dr. Van Hurley, you can go to her website, drvanhurley.com. And is that D-R or it's spelled
D-R.
Out? D-R. D-R. Dr. V-A-N-H-E-R-L-E. We'll put it in a little graphic for you. Producer, please insert here. DrVanHurley.com. Dr. B, thank you so much.
Thank you both very much. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
That was awesome.
I've got no one in my life that'll check my anus.
Please tell me you've got this on the
bureau. I will.
No, but that's true. You know, if you said, you know.
DrVanHurley.
No, but sometimes you can't get into the doctor right away, and you just, if you want,
you can't get into us
anybody
right
that'll
away.
Say, honey, I'll check your anus right for a mole. I want that. I'm going to put that on my want list. Want list.
Before she hits the ground, she's gonna want to explode. Let her step aside, let her run and hide. She holds it all up under that pretty head of hers. Oh, it comes screaming out in a little electric shout.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore, because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.